The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Curtis Subaru Studio. Welcome to our top stories this hour. It is a story so crazy, I had trouble believing it even as I was telling you about it yesterday. But now I have it confirmed from the very top. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
Well, if you're listening to yesterday's radio show, there was some audio that I found absolutely amazing out of King County elections. They were having a meeting of the canvassing board, and they were talking about what is a legitimate ballot here in King County and in our state. And somebody asked, what if they wrote it on a napkin? Here is the audio from yesterday's show.
So even if someone took a napkin and just wrote the office, both race, and then their selection,
That would be enough, and we would count that as a vote.
Okay.
So you heard the answer. If somebody writes their ballot or their selection, their vote, on a napkin, that would be accepted. And I heard that, and I thought, well, that's just not possible. We have not gone that crazy. And so when I'm baffled by craziness, I tend to turn to our outgoing Secretary of State, Kim Wyman, who joins us on the Dory Monson Show. Hello, Madam Secretary. Good to talk to you. Or you've already resigned, haven't you?
No, I have not officially resigned. I still am the Secretary of State until Monday when I take my oath of office in my new job.
Okay. All right. I'll get back to that in just a couple of minutes.
Okay.
We're voting by napkin in Washington State?
Not exactly. Remember, and go back to the 2000 election when Bush v. Gore and Congress wrote a very large bill called the Help America Vote Act. One of the things they specified is that states need to define what voter intent is. And if you are a state like ours that has in state law that if you can determine or discern the voter's intent, you have to count the ballot. So we have that law in place.
Okay, so if somebody writes, Secretary of State, Kim Wyman. And then do they have to sign the napkin?
No. And this is like any part of elections. Remember, you can't look at any part of it in isolation. So remember that if we got to a point where we opened a security envelope processing ballots and came across a napkin or a piece of notebook paper, whatever, that the voter used, the voter's pamphlet, sample ballot, for example, as long as they had the candidate's name, the office they were running for, and the partisan affiliation correct, and the voter was eligible to vote on that race, then, and remember, at that point, they've already verified the signature for the voter against the one on file. They've already validated that that person hasn't voted more than once and that they were eligible to participate in the election. So by the time we get to the ballot, that ballot, that voter is eligible to participate. So yes, if they get it all right on whatever format they turn it in, that ballot will be counted. It'll be duplicated, but it'll be counted.
But why? I mean, ballots used to be rather sacrosanct, and we held them in high regard. And I just don't understand why, when everybody is sent a ballot who's eligible to vote, I don't understand why we're accepting other forms like napkins or scraps of paper or anything else. And I'll explain in a minute why this scares me so much. But first, that question, why? What's the point of this?
Well, you know, remember, went back in the day when we were transitioning from polling place voting to absentee voting to vote by mail. That was one of the very heated discussion points that we had. And I can remember testifying in front of the legislature multiple times on these issues. There were so many legislators that were very worried. What if a voter loses their ballot and it's election day and they have to get it turned in? What's the fail-safe? And our state has always focused on not only having the security measures, but having the fail-safe for voters that may make mistakes or, you know, their dog ate their ballot, whatever the scenario. So we had these multiple layers of, as long as the voter gets these things right, the county canvassing board can count the ballot. That was the intent.
So here's what I fear. Worst case scenario, and I don't know, maybe it's already happened. Let's say, and I know the napkin thing's a hypothetical, but I'm going to stick with it here. So somebody opens the envelope, there's a napkin inside, and it says Donald Trump. And that person has some personal bias. And they go, It's on a napkin. They crumble it up. They throw it in the garbage. The next one, they open up the, it has a napkin. It says Joe Biden. They go, oh, we got to count this Joe Biden napkin. There seems to be too much subjectivity put in the hands of the person who opens that envelope. And I just think that, you know, having a standardized system through which to vote makes much more sense and eliminates the possibility of somebody saying, it's just a scrap paper. Yeah, I threw it away.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, you can't look at any one action in isolation. So remember, by rule and by law, we have procedures in place. So there's no time when any person is alone with ballots. So you should never in an election office have a single person opening and processing ballots, or checking signatures, or sorting ballots. Any of those steps are always done in a dual control environment like a bank.
Mm-hmm.
So you never have that opportunity for a single person to be making those value judgments of, oh, I don't like the way they voted on this tax issue, so I'm going to, you know, get rid of this ballot. Plus, we have accountability measures. So we know that 100 ballots in this batch were in envelopes that came in, the 100 envelopes, excuse me, came in this batch. They opened them, separated from the envelopes, and now they have to account for the ballot in each of the security envelopes. So if there's only 99, they document that. And so each of those steps along the process, we are accounting for every mm-hmm. envelope we received against the computer tallies that we're doing on multiple levels. So there's no single point where those things can happen where it wouldn't be detected. And the best analogy I can give you is a bank and how they account for your money. And they have to account for every single penny every single day. And that's the level of reconciliation that counties are doing. And those checks and balances are physical and electronic. And they have people are logging in and out. We are at any point in election can go back and show you who had access to any given ballot in any given time.
I'm still a little shell-shocked about having witnessed an election being stolen in Washington State. And I know this predated you, Madam Secretary, but I spent scores of hours on this radio show covering the 2004 gubernatorial election. And there is zero doubt in my mind that one party stole that election, and it's a party that now has sold control again with you leaving. But, and let me ask you, because my listeners challenge me on this when I say I have zero doubt. I'm sure that you have studied what happened in 2004 over the course of your career. Do you have any doubt that that election was stolen?
Well, not only do I have memory of it, I lived through it. I was a Thurston County auditor, so I have a very good personal knowledge of that election.
Yeah.
I think in 2004, the biggest problems, particularly for King County, because let's face it, that's what you're really focusing on,
sure,
was in 2004 in King County, there was kind of a culture of close enough is good enough. They had been under-resourced for a long time. They didn't have enough people to do the work for the volume of work they had. And so you just had to get through it because you had really short deadlines. And we've expanded those, by the way, over time. So what happened, I'll give you one example. So polling places. Polling places after Election Day, every county, what you would do is you would balance the poll book that the poll workers were in control of, count the number of signatures in the poll book, compare it to the number of voters who returned ballots, how many of those ballots might have been spoiled, how many of those ballots were provisional ballots, and all of that should balance. 500 people signed the poll book, 500 ballots were counted. Boom, done. King County, as long as that was plus or minus three, it was considered balanced. Now, there were 1,000 poll books. I can't remember the number. It's between 1,000 and 2,000 poll books in King County on any given election, including Rossi Gregoire. Plus or minus three, over 1,000 poll books is problematic.
Of course.
They couldn't account for anything then. So that was then. What's changed now and why you and your listeners...
Before you move on to what's changed now, mm-hmm. you just gave me a really long answer to what mm-hmm. could have been a yes or no. Do you have any doubt that the 2004 election was stolen?
I have no doubt that no one can actually prove it or disprove it. I think that half the state believes it was stolen, half the state believes that Governor Gregoire was elected, and you can't convince either side otherwise all these years later. I think it was a complete lack of accountability and ability to defend the election. all these years later. And where I was going with that is today, King County can not only reconcile and account for every ballot they receive, they do it to a Six Sigma level of accuracy. They couldn't do that in 2004. So it's an evolution that has been good and positive, but that stigma is always going to be there, and it's that's what, you know, we have to work with.
Well, yeah, and you know, move forward 16 years from 2004, there were so many irregularities in 2020, not in our state necessarily, but last time I had you on, you were not at liberty to talk about your new job. Can we talk about that for just a minute here?
We sure can.
Okay, so. But before I move on to that, so I should feel okay. Well, you know, I have a way to fold my next question into your new job. So you were reelected just a year ago, right?
That's correct.
Okay, and you were the only Republican statewide office holder on the entire West Coast, and I think the people who voted for you had a reasonable expectation that you were going to stick around for four more years. So I think there are people who feel a little burned by that. What do you say to them?
Well, you know, I'm sorry I'm not completing my term would be where I would start. And that's the hardest decision on this job offer and this decision to move east. But it truly, Dory, is a call to duty. You know, it was service that brought me here to Washington 30 years ago. And it's service that's taking me away. I'm sorry. Gosh, I didn't want to get teary on your show. But, you know, this, you know, our country right now is in a lot of ways where Washington was in 2004. Of, you know, a large swath of people do not believe our elections are secure. There's all sorts of misinformation and disinformation going on, you know, on the social media networks. And people don't believe the foundational pillar of our democracy. They do not believe that, you know, people were legitimately elected. And that's frightening to me as an American. And so I have an opportunity to protect and defend not only our Constitution, but our democracy, and I have to do that.
Okay. And by the way, don't feel bad. I'm like a latter-day Barbara Walters. I can make the most toughened person cry. That's my job.
I know, but you cry too, so that makes me feel better. You're a weeper too, so I'm okay.
That is a very fair point. So Jay Inslee had to appoint your successor. I've had Steve Hobbs on a couple times. Seems like a nice man. I have tremendous respect for our military, and I know he served in Kosovo and in Iraq, and I have nothing but respect for his service. I'm nervous as a cat about Democrats being in charge of everything. I'm nervous about that because of what happened in 2004. I'm nervous because of the irregularities I've seen, and no matter how good a man he is, he's been in politics for 16 years. And I think, no offense to you, I think politics corrupts the souls of people because there's so much power and money and control that is involved. And I think it's a horrible thing to have one party in control of everything in the state, including elections. And I say that based on being shell-shocked still from 2004.
Yes, and you know, Dory, I share that that concern with you as well. I think that Senator Hobbs is going to step up and do the right thing and is going to do a great job. But I agree with you. I think there are one of the strengths of our, you know, democracy is that you have a balance of power and a separation of powers and duties. And it does make me nervous, but, you know, the voters are going to have an opportunity to decide next November whether he should stay or go. And he has about a year to prove to them why he should be Secretary of State. So I hope that he keeps in the long tradition that Washington Secretaries of State, myself included, have had of being fair and impartial and making sure our system is accessible and secure. And you know, only time will tell.
Okay. And last thing, I know you have really touted for a long time the mail-in ballots. I just, more and more, I think it is horrible. I think we should go back to having the polling places that everybody else seems to think is just some relic of a bygone time. But, you know, I remember having to sign my name in the book before they presented me with my first ballot in 1980, when I voted, by the way, Kim, for Jimmy Carter over Ronald Reagan. First presidential vote I ever cast.
Yeah, I balanced you out. I voted for Ronald Reagan, so we're
I've
even.
Changed
that was
a
my
little
first election.
Over the years. but that was so much safer, these mail-out ballots. And there were millions around the country. And you're going to be one of the people who's dutied to try to make this work. But the mail-in ballots, I think, are the single biggest problem that people have with confidence in our election system.
And they are, and I think until people come in and actually observe it and see all of the checks and balances in place, it's easy to, you know, poke holes in the security or the sanctity of them. And we all remember the polling places with great affection. They had their share of problems as well, just like lever machines did, punch card voting did. There's no perfect system. It's the laws the legislature makes. I know people get very frustrated with me being an advocate for vote by mail and the various things that I've been an advocate for through the years and helping build the system. And I've been fighting very hard to make sure the security measures were in place for all of the expanded accessibility that our state has had, quite frankly, under Democratic control of the legislature and the governor's mansion. You know, so I feel good about where I'm leaving this system, but people need to be engaged and involved, and ultimately it's our state legislature that writes these laws and makes the determination of what the policy is. People conflate that and they blame me, which is fine. You know, I wish I had that kind of power. Ultimately, it's the legislature and the governor. So if people don't like vote by mail elections, elect Republicans, get the laws changed. But until that happens, election administrators have to follow the law. And it's not King County elections' fault or, you know, mine that we have vote-by-mail elections. If people don't like them, there's a way to change it. It's through the legislature.
Well, but isn't that a problem just in and of itself, that Democrats want vote-by-mail because they think that will win elections for them, and Republicans want something a little more traditional because they think that will win elections? If the mode of electing people is guaranteed to be favorable to one party, and it unquestionably was in last year's presidential election, then something's screwed up. If there's something that is so strongly tilted in favor of one political party.
Well, you know, I don't think it, again, you can't look at all of that in isolation. When you start looking at 2020 and vote by mail or expanded absentee voting and turnout and how, you know, President Trump did, one of the ironies is he spent 6 months talking about vote by mail and absentee ballots being insecure and fraught with fraud. He suppressed his own base from using the tool that was going to help them cast the ballot. I think that the challenge is always that the state legislature in each of the 50 states gets to determine how we vote and what those rules and laws are. And that's actually a strength and a weakness of the system. But, you know, we have 50 political cultures in our country, and the Constitution says that it's states that get to determine how they elect their representatives. And that's a healthy thing. We don't want the federal government taking over our elections. And so you talked about what you just said at that federal level. That's more frightening than what
right.
individual states are doing.
Okay, I've taken way too much of your time. But now that you're back, you're going to be back in D.C. and you're going to have a little more power, is there any way to just have these elections where I get to decide them? Just me?
You know,
could you craft a law like that?
I'll work on that. How about this? We try to get it so just you and I, like we can be like the king and queen, and we can just run all the world. I think everything would be better if they would just give us that kind of power.
Yeah, I will just assign who has what office.
There you go.
I don't want to do the water commissioner nonsense, but the federal races and the state races, okay? Please
Fair.
Work
okay.
on that for me. Okay.
Okay. I'll see what I can do. Okay.
Okay. I'm really sorry to see you leaving. I'm very fond of you personally and professionally, and you've always been great coming on the show.
Well, thank you. And I thank you for having me on so many times. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Dory. And I will be on my Cairo app, keeping track and finding out what's really happening in Seattle with your show. So thank you for
All
what
right.
you do.
Let me know the days you're listening in, and I'll try to make the show extra good.
Fair. I'll do that.
Okay. All right. All right. Happy trails. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
Our outgoing Secretary of State, Kim Wyman, joining us. And that is your big lead for today.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
All right. What do you think? Did her vote by napkin answer satisfy you? I'm still dubious. You can text me at 888-973-CHIRO. 888-973-5476. Coming up next, the mess that is my home neighborhood of Ballard. Oh, my gosh. When are the neighbors going to start taking the law into their own hands? That would be the worst-case scenario, but politicians are ignoring it. It's all coming up on the Dory Monson Show. Toughened on the mean streets of Ballard. We continue. I think we've had more stories today that nobody else in the local media has touched. Kim Schreier and the napkin ballots. And we got some more we have cooking for you tomorrow. But there are also times where I greatly admire what my brothers and sisters in the media do. Because in Ballard right now, there is a guy living on Leary Way, known as the Lawnmower Man. His name is Charles Woodward. And in a few block stretch of Leary Way there, there's the double-decker RV where on top of a Winnebago, they have taken 2x4s and plywood and just built a second floor. Horribly dangerous. You and I would not be allowed to do anything like this in our homes. We'd have people getting in our face telling us to tear it down. But no, if you are a homeless, drug-addicted person, you can walk around and do things with absolute impunity. Not far from the double-decker RV is Charles Woodward, the lawnmower man. He has about 20 lawnmowers on the sidewalk. I'm sure they were all legally obtained. He has a white panel van in which he lives. He has built two ramshackle sheds on the right between the sidewalk and the street, on the parking strip there. Which, again, you and I build a shed that's 2 inches bigger than what you need permits for, and it's not permitted. Your city and my city will be at our property saying, take it down. But when a person does it on the streets of Ballard, our politicians say, let's not worry about that. So we're enforcing laws against the tax-paying, hard-working people. And we're giving a free pass to people who mostly are criminal drug addicts. We've gone completely 180 degrees upside down. Jonathan Cho is a reporter at Channel 4, ComoNews.com. And I had Jonathan on a couple of hours ago. I'd never had him on the show before. I've admired his work for a long time. He's a really good guy. I like talking to him. But some of the coverage, he went to try to talk to this lawnmower man. He's got a generator that makes a ton of noise. He has a metal grinder, and he's making noise all through the night, and the neighbors are going insane. There are residential houses right next to the sidewalk. So if one of those homeowners or renters, if they put up a shed in their front yard on the east side of the sidewalk, the city would say, hey, take that down. If a homeless, drug addict, mentally disturbed person builds it on the west side of the sidewalk, the city says, oh, what shed? I don't see anything. Just go ahead. And here is one of the encounters that Jonathan Cho at ComoNews.com posted on Twitter.
Get the f*** out of here. You're harassing me. Get the f*** out of here. I got witnesses. Get the f*** out of here. Don't touch me. Don't f***ing touch me.
Quit leaning in.
No, you're going to get the f*** out of here.
You stop it.
No. Why get the f*** out of here. Don't you harass me, mother. You're not hearing me. Do I need to yell louder, bitch? I don't give a f***. You're right, it is. I got witnesses. It's all I'm filming, you stupid f***. Get the f*** out of here. Okay. Don't follow me.
Wouldn't it be lovely to live in one of those homes adjacent to this guy, to hear stuff like this when a reporter is saying, you know, why are you doing this? And here's more of the encounter.
Are you stupid enough? Do you want a problem? Is that what you want?
Don't come near us, Charles.
What's your first name?
You ain't gonna touch me.
No, listen. What's your first name? Sir.
Leave. Now.
Sir.
Leave. I'm telling you to leave now. If you air any of it, I'll have your ass. I'll lawsuit your ass. Come back on this sidewalk, I'll lawsuit all of you.
It's public property, sir.
Not anymore, it isn't. Not to people who are harassing me.
Who owns the sidewalk?
It is off limits to you. Understand? You
sir. Come on, that's a lawsuit. Listen. I've got a lawsuit. You want?
Sir, listen to me.
I want you to get the f*** out of here. I'm not playing your f***ing rules, motherfucker.
I wanted to introduce myself.
I don't want you to introduce yourself. You're out here f***ing with the homeless people, and you're going to get the f*** out of here. F*** you not.
Charles, we just want your side of the story.
F*** you. Shut the f*** up. We ain't talking to you. You don't want anybody's side of the story. You proved that the last time you were here. Stupid f***.
Okay, I will give the guy credit for one thing. His creative use of making the word lawsuit a verb. I'll lawsuit you! So, this guy has just made life a living hell for really good people like Sean Telford, who lives right by all of this. And he says they've called the mayor, they've called the absolutely most worthless Seattle City Councilman ever, Dan Strauss, who's let this happen to Ballard. Dan Strauss, I thought Mike O'Brien was bad. Whew! Ballard got much, much, much worse with Dan Strauss. So these poor neighbors, taxpayers, working people, job creators, they're the ones who have been calling everybody saying, please help us. And nothing.
We're kind of stuck right now in this situation. The Hope team said there's nothing they can do. If Charles doesn't want services, they can't force him to take it.
And this guy, Sean, he sounds like a good man with a good heart who wants to have compassion, but it gets worn down after weeks and months of this nonsense.
The selective enforcement of our rules around here is really wearing down the compassion that we have for this issue.
And as Sean referenced, Jonathan Cho reported that this guy was offered shelter. One of the navigation teams went to him and said, hey, we'll give you a place with a roof over your head. And here is his response.
We heard the Hope team came and offered you housing.
What kind of housing? What, with other crazy people? What, are you stupid? I'm not stupid enough to live next to an apartment with people shooting people. Get the out of here, man. The programs suck. And I'm not against housing.
So if someone comes out to offer you housing, you're going to take it?
No.
Why not?
I'm going to look it over, and then I'm going to think about it, dummy.
How is this tolerated? I'm saying, Jenny Durkin, would you let this happen right outside your $20 million gated Lake Washington mansion? Would you let somebody out there running a generator, a metal grinder, till all hours of the morning? And if the answer is no, then why do you tolerate it for your citizens? For the people who probably voted for you? Dan Strauss, what are you doing? Why'd you run for Seattle City Council if you're not going to do a thing to help people in your district? What was the whole point? Just so you could get the title?
Hello, I'm a city councilman. It's nice to meet you. Here's my staff. They're all bobbing head dolls.
You're great, Dan. Dan, you're the best.
Why'd you run for council if you're not going to do anything? If you give up Ballard Commons to drug addicts, you give up the streets to drug addicts. And I will tell you something. I said, I don't want vigilanteism. But when you push people too far, people are going to protect their homes and their families. They're not going to let their kids walk past a crazy man every single day. And I'm getting lots of texts about that. And again, I'm not calling for any vigilanteism, but one listener from 206. Dory, listening to the last segment with Lawnmower Man, it honestly makes me want to get my son and start going up to these neighborhoods and tell the neighbors, give us $1,000, $500, whatever, and we'll take care of the problem for you. A guy like this needs a couple big guys to come grab him and drag his ass down the street until he comes back. It won't be as pretty next time. It's gotten to this point. We are a construction crew that works in Seattle every day, and this city has turned into a pile of bleep. Hey, Jenny Durkin, Dan Strauss, do your jobs, or bad things are going to happen. You've pushed people well over the limit. And Awesome Audio's coming up next. Down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. And we are not finished. Thank you for all the tips that led to all the exclusive stories that we're able to present today and every day. I'll have more on Congresswoman Kim Schreier not reporting $500,000 purchase of Apple stock. I'm looking into that some more. Should have some more information on that for you tomorrow. A story that everybody else in the local media, for some reason, is ignoring when she sits on a House committee that oversees telecommunications and technology. Her buying a $500,000 of Apple stock might have a little inside knowledge coming with it. Dr. Kim Schreier. But yeah, we don't want to hurt the Democrats, say the rest of the media. So we'll just we'll sweep that one under the rug. Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. All right, with that as a prelude, let's get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
Man, everybody loved this. I played it last hour. Anthony Fauci has some serious credibility issues, but the major networks still turn to him all the time. But there's coming some backlash, including by the band Five Time August that wrote the song about Fauci titled Sad Little Man.
Sitting deep in a lie, he's dead in his soul, but he'll keep you alive. Do what he says, not what he do, 'cause the truth is for him and the lie is for you. Sad little man, but he's treated like a god, as the faithless pray to a fake and a fraud. Worship the man, pledge to his word. One shot, two shot, now you get a third. Sad little man, sad little man, you better run now while you know you can. Sad little man, sad little man, you don't fool me, you sad little man.
If you want to hear the whole thing, Nicole will post that on our Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/Dory Monson, DoriMonson. Is Kamala Harris on the way out? Growing talk, all quarters of D.C. media, that they are preparing to get rid of Kamala Harris. CNN has made a shocking report that Joe Biden is considering appointing Kamala Harris to the next Supreme Court vacancy so they can get rid of her because she's so incompetent as a vice president. That would be criminal, to put somebody who you know is that incompetent on the Supreme Court. But Fox News correspondent, he's a congressional reporter, Chad Pergram. He's a great reporter. He has fantastic sources. And here's what one of his sources told him to prepare for.
You know, just to kind of let you guys in on a little secret here, I was, you know, told about 2 to 3 weeks ago, maybe this pertains to the Supreme Court, maybe this pertains to, you know, changing the ticket before you get into 2024. You know, FDR, seemingly he burned through a vice president almost every time he was up for office. But I got an email from somebody who really knows this place very well, who said, Chad, start to familiarize yourself with the confirmation process, just not in the Senate, but the House, for a vice president. Of course, we've not gone through that since, you know, President Ford picked Nelson Rockefeller. Again, as you know, Brett, I'm always playing defense and preparing for things like that. But I was very surprised to get that very cryptic email just a couple of weeks ago.
Is Kamala Harris so incompetent that they would actually get rid of the first woman of color to be part of a presidential ticket like that? That would be unbelievable. But she is pretty incompetent. Mike Leach, former Cougar coach, now at Mississippi State. They had a big win. And in the locker room, he was dancing with his players. Mike Leach is all right in the middle of this, showing off his moves. And then he went to his post-game press conference, where he had to break down his dancing.
A bunch of our players love to dance, and the music's going and all that, and then they try to get me to do it, and I was afraid they might dump something over my head if I didn't, you know, like water and, worst of all, Gatorade. So I figured, you know, I better comply, which I did. So I started out just trying to walk in place, and that was clearly not satisfactory with it. And then that wasn't satisfactory with my captors. I tried to bring the knees a little higher, and then I got the hands up to try to finish the deal off. And I do think I outdid Elaine on Seinfeld, but, you know, as soon as I thought I was safe to stop, I did, and let them have a great time.
Mike Leach, I miss him being here in the Northwest. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, do you know some cars are gas-powered?
This truck 3 times heavier. 0 to 60 in 3 seconds.
Whoa.
And besides, there's a beautiful red Corvette, maroon Corvette I'm driving home over here.
Oh, Lordy. All right, that's going to do it for us. Tom Cruise coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times, and I'll see you back here tomorrow.
You don't really know what you're doing. You're like one of those European pop bands that sing in English but don't actually know what any of the lyrics are.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.